Coming up on Fronteras, the U.S. Border Patrol shot and killed a teenage boy the agency suspects was throwing rocks at an agent on the border.
Seven times. It appeared that it was two through his head and four through his body.
Another bullet hit the boy in the arm. Coming up, a look at how Border Patrol agents defend themselves and what happens to the investigations into these shootings after the smoke clears. And one of the closest congressional races in Arizona is taking place in the state's brand new District 9. Independents make up the largest group of voters there.
I want somebody who knows how to balance the books and also has a heart for the environment and for people.
The contest to win Arizona's new swing district. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its Local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. A teenaged boy in Nogales, Mexico, was shot dead by the U.S. Border Patrol. The Border Patrol says he was throwing rocks. His death is under investigation. It was just the latest in a spate of shootings by the Border Patrol along the border. The shootings, justified or not, cause outrage in border communities. And one of the biggest issues, they take years to resolve. From our Fronteras desk, Michelle Marisco investigates.
Zelma Barón is angry. It's been nearly 2 years since her son was killed by a Border Patrol agent along the Arizona border. She's standing in a busy park in Nogales, Mexico on a Saturday morning. A group of teenage cheerleaders practices its dance moves to blasting techno music behind her.
¿A quién me puedo acudir? ¿A quién quiero puedo ir? Para que no quede impune esto.
She doesn't know whom to turn to, and she worries the case will just linger on. Her son was named Ramses. He was 17. The Border Patrol said Ramses was throwing rocks at agents who were trying to make a drug bust. 2 years later, the mother says she's been told nothing about where the case stands. She hasn't heard from a Mexican government official since 4 days after her son was killed, let alone an American one. Nothing. She's gotten no help, she says. Since 2010, 17 people were killed by Border Patrol agents. Most of those cases, like the case of Barón's son, remain under investigation by the FBI and therefore outside public scrutiny. No one is talking. Of those 17 cases, 7 people were killed while they were in Mexico. In many of those cases, the Border Patrol claimed someone was throwing rocks at the agents. But that version of events is disputed in at least 2 of the shootings. Clouding the issue, the culpability of the victims. Like in a case in 2010 in Arizona, the victim ran back to Mexico after a failed drug run. His accomplices on the Mexican side were throwing rocks at the agents to try to stop them from apprehending him.
There's a lot involved.
Art Del Cueto is a Border Patrol agent in Tucson. He's also the Tucson sector's union president. He explains why it takes so long to investigate these Border Patrol shootings.
They take so much time because they don't want to leave any loopholes.
So people like Barón, this victim's mother, wait for years. In the meantime, the number of these cases continues to grow. Homeland Security considers rocks dangerous weapons, so its use of force policies allow agents to shoot back at someone throwing at them. After members of Congress protested, the policy is currently under review. The union's Del Cueto agrees with this policy. It's not gravel-sized rocks, he says, that are being thrown. It's big rocks. He's been hit, he said, once with a 40-ounce beer bottle packed with mud and rocks.
Oh, it hurt. It knocked me down. I was on the ground. Luckily I was close enough to the border. They jumped right away into Mexico, and I kind of drug myself behind some mesquite bushes to stop any more projectiles from hitting me.
The most recent death in Nogales was also blamed on rocks. 16-year-old Jose Antonio Rodriguez. He was either part of a group throwing rocks at a Border Patrol agent in Nogales, or he was an innocent walking along the sidewalk 40 feet away from the border. He was found lying on the ground in a pool of his own blood.
Seven times. It appeared that it was two through his head and four through his body.
Luis Parra is a lawyer hired by the family. He says another bullet hit the boy in the arm. Another eight bullet holes peppered the wall over and around his body.
They're maintaining that Jose Antonio was not involved in any wrongdoing other than perhaps just being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
On this Saturday morning, a small procession winds its way through the streets in Nogales to the port, shouting for justice. Rodriguez's mother, Araceli.
Que no se queden así nada más. Que no se queden así. Que no olviden el caso.
She worries that her son's case will end in silence, forgotten, just like the killing from 2 years ago. Reporting from Nogales, Sonora, I'm Michelle Marisco.
Exports from Texas, California, and Michigan have soared since the 1990s when the North American Free Trade Agreement opened U.S. markets to Mexico. But not every state has been as savvy promoting cross-border trade. In this last of our Fronteras series, NAFTA, 20 years later, Peter O'Dowd tells us how one border state is scrambling to catch up by tapping into the global supply chain.
Let's begin 250 miles south of Arizona, in the Mexican port city of Guaymas. Behind me, the Sea of Cortez shimmers in the distance. Before me, a backhoe dumps powdery black ore onto a conveyor belt. It leads to a hulking fortress on the water.
You can see we are loading a ship with copper concentrate that comes from Arizona, and we're shipping to China.
The port's Guillermo von Borstel explaining how Mexico links the Southwest to the rest of the world. Guaymas is one of the closest ports to landlocked states like Arizona. NAFTA's presence here has boosted the confidence of American investors, and it's an important factor in the port's growth. Van Borstel says long-term plans call for 10 additional docks, and early next year, a new container service could ship even more goods from western states to the rest of the world, up to 10,000 containers annually.
That's a relatively small amount, yeah?
Exactly. It's a small amount, but that's why we are on the beginning of this journey.
Even 20 years after NAFTA's signing, it's the beginning of a trade journey for states like Arizona as well. The Guaymas port is at the southern end of something called the Canamex Corridor, a high-priority transportation route from Canada down to the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona. The NAFTA creation was intended to, quote, harvest the benefits of increased trade. While states like Texas and California have seen benefits from their proximity to the border, not as much in Arizona. Darren Henderson is a transportation planner in Phoenix.
If you look at it as a football analogy, you know, we're just an expansion team. You know, we're just getting ourselves into the game.
The numbers back him up. Arizona is one of just three states to see foreign exports fall since 2006. In that time, Texas is up 66%. And more recently, even New Mexico has sprinted forward in the race for cross-border trade. Henderson says Arizona needs change.
We need to move away from being one-dimensional, focused on the construction of housing, and look at what other opportunities present themselves.
This jet flying over the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport represents one such opportunity, according to Suzanne Kinney with the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
It's really a vision that we have for our state to make Phoenix the hub of commercial activity and international trade for the southwestern United States and to include northern Mexico.
To do that, the chamber is advocating for something called Southwest Direct. Here on the outskirts of Phoenix, land is plentiful and industrial buildings are still empty after the real estate bust. The idea, use that space to build something like the Alliance Global Logistics Hub outside of Dallas. It's considered the gold standard for connecting U.S. manufacturers with the rest of the world.
Freight forwarders, logistics companies, warehousing, customs brokers.
Using planes, trains, and trucks, Kinney says the state could intercept, process, and quickly redistribute foreign cargo that normally passes right through Arizona. Much of it would come from or be delivered to Mexican ports.
they do play a role, an important role. It's all about, you know, they'll be able to bring these massive cargo ships in, and sort of that's point one. Then it's a matter of that transportation infrastructure, highways and rail, to get it the rest of the way.
And that's what has regional planners from Tucson to Phoenix salivating. Groups of cities are commissioning freight and rail studies. The transportation department is holding meetings on a new interstate between Phoenix and Las Vegas. Gateway Airport Services Manager John Barry says this connectivity must be part of the state's future.
It has to be. I think if Arizona wants to compete in a global market, it has to be.
But Arizona isn't the only one with plans. Just a few miles from the border, Union Pacific has already broken ground in New Mexico on a freight logistics center worth $400 million. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd.
There's still more Fronteras coming up.
Usually when I turn on the TV, I want to watch something else. There's a moment when you don't want to be watching the same thing, especially when you already decide who you want to vote for.
A political ad storm is flooding Spanish-language TV channels in Las Vegas during the final days leading up to the election. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. The Fronteras desk is looking at key races across the region this election, races that illuminate our demographic and political changes. In Arizona, one of the tightest congressional races is playing out in a brand new district in the Phoenix metro area. It's Congressional District 9. How the district votes could say a lot about what independent voters in Arizona are looking for in a candidate. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Ju Jaffe Block reports.
The winner of this tight District 9 race will represent a first for Arizona's congressional delegation.
I'm Vernon Parker.
Parker's the Republican, a 52-year-old former mayor and previous member of the Bush administration who grew up poor. He also would be Arizona's first black representative in Congress. Here he is in a TV interview.
I know that I would go to Congress and I would represent you and make sure that we stop the finger pointing, make sure that the American people are put first again.
Now, the Democrat.
I'm Kyrsten Sinema.
Sinema's a 36-year-old former state legislator who was once homeless as a child.
I'm running for Congress because I want every kid in this country to have the same shot to make it to the middle class and succeed just like I did.
She's also openly bisexual, which would be a first in Congress, making this race
probably unique to the whole country.
That's Wes Gullett, a Phoenix-based political analyst.
Where you have an African-American Republican and a bisexual Democrat running against each other, that probably didn't happen too often.
To be clear, neither candidate is drawing attention to their race or sexuality. In fact, they aren't even drawing much attention to their party affiliations either. That's because independents are surging in Arizona. In the brand new District 9, they slightly outnumber Democrats and Republicans. So both Parker and Sinema are trying to paint themselves as moderates and are using negative ads to present the other as an extremist.
Vernon Parker is a Tea Party candidate who wants to force his narrow religious views on women.
This video is by the Sinema campaign.
And Parker would make abortion illegal, even in cases of rape or incest.
Parker's campaign says he does support exceptions for rape and incest, though one survey he filled out could be construed otherwise. A pro-Parker political action committee put out this ad against Sinema.
She described herself as a socialist.
The ad recirculates controversial quotes Sinema gave in an old magazine interview that she claims were meant to be satirical. She called her fashion sense Prada socialist.
And Kyrsten Sinema attacked stay-at-home moms, calling them leeches. Do you agree with Kyrsten Sinema? This November, tell Kyrsten Sinema she's too extreme for Arizona.
District 9 is believed to be competitive for both parties. The independents here are thought to lean slightly to the left because the district includes the students at Arizona State University in Tempe. It's about 60% white, a quarter Latino, and less than 5% black. It's home to voters like Kathy Lang, who was buying groceries this week at her local Safeway.
I want somebody who knows how to balance the books and also has a heart for the environment and for people.
Lang is that sought-after, independent, undecided voter in District 9. But despite all the ads about Sinema and Parker, she's still not sure which one she prefers.
There are so many negative ads, it's kind of a blur. So I couldn't tell you the specifics on either candidate, you know, what their commercials were all about, because I pretty much tune them out.
Another independent, retiree Marianne Alcott, has gone a step further.
So I've turned my television off. I'm not going to watch it till after the election.
But she's already decided, and her reasoning doesn't have much to do with either candidate personally or the demographics they represent. She's voting Democrat to vote against a Republican-controlled House of Representatives.
I want to get those people out of Washington that aren't doing anything and passing nothing. And they don't care about the country. They just care about one thing, getting the president out of office.
The ultimate makeup of the House is what has outside groups and national party committees funneling some $4.3 million into this race so far. Democratic leaders are hoping to pick up enough seats nationwide to have a majority, an outcome at this point not deemed likely. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
What we do know for sure is Las Vegas can claim a new record. The volume of political ads airing on TV in that city has reached an all-time high. And in this final stretch of the race, one of the biggest pitches of all is to Latino voters who may hold the key to victory. From the Fronteras desk in Las Vegas, Veronica Zaragovia reports.
Nevada's Latinos make up about 15% of registered voters. And because Las Vegas is a small TV market, television ads are cheap here. So campaigns, PACs, and political committees are throwing millions of dollars at ads to sway Latino voters. Ads like this pro-Mitt Romney spot criticizing Barack Obama's immigration reform. Or this one with Obama praising immigrant students. This year in Las Vegas alone, at least $4 million has been spent on Spanish-language TV ads at two stations, Univision and Telemundo. That's according to analyst firm Kantar Media. In 2008, at the same two stations, only $600,000 was spent. Miguel Funes moved here 15 years ago from Honduras. He says he's tired of the mailers, the robocalls, and the incessant barrage of political ads on TV.
Usually when I turn on the TV, I want to watch something else. There's a moment when you don't want to be watching the same thing, especially when you already decide who you want to vote for. You know, in calls. How my phone at home is always ringing. Bing, 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 bing.
But Alicia Alcuna likes the attention. She's on medical leave from her job sewing uniforms at the Hard Rock Casino. She says politicians make a first impression and cover important issues in these spots.
Seeing these ads is important, Alcuna says. It's the first point of contact when I think, oh, that interests me. But it's the fact that I saw it on television that first provoked my interest.
But does the Spanish spoken in these ads matter? Republican Dean Heller is campaigning for a Senate seat in Nevada. His wife, Lynn, speaks in this ad. In the ad, we see a pastoral scene. Heller walking with Lynn and leading a horse. Professor Federico Zubervi gives this one a failing grade.
Her Spanish doesn't overcome the disconnect with that particular image.
Zubervi leads the Center for the Study of Latino Media and Markets at Texas State University.
Showing him with a horse is kind of way out of social class for most Latinos, about being someone who's taking care of a nice private horse in a nice private ranch, and that's really class beyond a connection with Latinos.
Zubervi says these ads should be made in English, too, so that Latinos who don't speak Spanish can refer to the same one when discussing the campaigns. But no matter the language, the common reference for Latino voters will be a candidate who speaks to their needs.
Take voter Alfonso Razo, who works at the Las Vegas Convention Center. He's not paying attention to the bad Spanish accents, but on who is going to follow through for the Latino community.
When they get elected, it would be good if they not only speak in Spanish, but they actually put forth the effort to help us. If they want our help, they shouldn't forget Spanish once elected.
Pa'lante con Obama.
Soy Barack Obama y apruebo este mensaje.
Su ataque a Dean Heller por el Medicare fue nombrada
la mentira del año.
In these last few days leading up to Election Day, Univision and its sister station Telefutura say they have more than 1,000 Spanish political ads lined up to air in Las Vegas. Democrats have dominated the Spanish language ads for the last year, but TV management says for the home stretch, Republicans have outspent their rivals.
Soy Mitt Romney y apruebo este mensaje.
In Las Vegas, I'm Veronica Zaragovia.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. You can find us on Facebook, where we invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. The handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.